From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, this is From the Bookshelf. I'm Gary Shapiro.
Since Al Jolson said, "You ain't heard nothing yet" in The Jazz Singer in 1927, pop stars have often moved from recording careers to acting, and some with great success, like Bing Crosby and Elvis Presley, and some, like Mariah Carey, not so much. Tom Santopietro is my guest, and he is the author of books on Doris Day and Barbara Streisand, and now his new book is called Sinatra in Hollywood, and it examines the acting career of the chairman of the board. Tom Santopietro, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thanks for having me on.
You know, Frank Sinatra is today considered, you know, the finest popular vocalist in history, but how is his acting career regarded, if at all?
Well, you know, that goes right to the reason behind the book, because I felt that Sinatra is a terrific actor, an Academy Award winning movie star, and if his body of work as an actor had been crafted by anybody else, there already would have been dozens of books about Frank Sinatra, the film actor. But because his music achievement is so extraordinary, I felt the film work had really been overlooked, and that's what I wanted to examine.
Well, let's focus on it then. I mean, Sinatra rose to fame as a boy vocalist with Tommy Dorsey's orchestra from 1940 to 1942, and he had already appeared in at least one film, according to your book. That was the film of the Major Bowes Amateur Hour thing. I've never seen this film.
Well, it's very rare, and it's six different 10-minute shorts. And Sinatra's in two of them. You have to look really hard to find Frank Sinatra.
What song does he sing? Is he with the Hoboken 3 or whatever they were called?
Yeah, it was the Hoboken 4. Well, it's actually, he's just in group numbers. There's no solo shot. And the sort of interesting sidelight to it, it was in 1935, filmed in the Bronx, and Sinatra appeared in blackface. That, you know, that's what was going on in the times then. And, of course, years later, Sinatra apologized for that and said he was just so unaware at that age and in 1935. And, you know, was actually, of course, became in the forefront of many racial equality movements. So it was he was making up for that error.
I guess people could hold it against him, but, I mean, Crosby appeared in blackface and Judy Garland and... Of course,
right.
Jolson, always.
Yeah. It's just Sinatra really felt terrible about it, and it was interesting listening to him talk about it. I saw an Edward R. Murrow interview he did, and he addressed that very issue. So, but anyway, he was on to much better, bigger films, starting with the big band appearances when he would, just as you said, with Tommy Dorsey and with Harry James, and then finally made his mark as a solo movie star, starting with Higher and Higher, and then the great Anchors Away with Gene Kelly.
So Higher and Higher is really sort of the first Frank Sinatra movie.
Right, exactly. It's the first one where he has a starring role, and Hollywood hedged its bets. He played himself. They weren't quite sure if he could act. But, you know, if you look at it, he has such star presence. That's what stars have. You don't want to watch anybody else. And he just registered so well, and the movie was a hit, that Louis B. Mayer wanted to sign him up and did for MGM.
Yeah, that was made at RKO, or where was that made, Higher and Higher?
Higher and Higher was at RKO, that's right.
You know, the thing that I love about Higher and Higher is that the songs from Higher and Higher, and there's a couple of great ones like I Couldn't Sleep a Wink Last Night,
right.
And This Is a Lovely Way to Spend an Evening, those records of those songs were made during the famous musician strike of the time, and so they're just a cappella recordings. So if you want to hear him sing those songs with an orchestra, you have to watch the movie.
I had to call you up this morning to see if everything was still all right. Yes, I had to call you up this morning, 'cause I couldn't sleep a wink last night.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
There are some terrific songs in that film, and really beautiful. And of course, he was in terrific voice at that stage.
But there's no particular hint that he's going to be a fine actor, I would have to say.
No, he is a star presence, but not yet an actor.
So you think the films with Gene Kelly were really the ones where he branched out as an actor, showed a bit of his talent?
Yeah, he really. And I say in the book, there's a moment in Anchors Away. You know, he has a couple of great dance numbers with Gene Kelly, and Sinatra could really hoof. I mean, Kelly taught him how. But there's a moment when he's in the film where he's alone in the Hollywood Bowl. You know, it's a great shot, 17,000 empty seats. And the camera glides in for this close-up, and Sinatra all alone sings, "I Fall in Love Too Easily." And by the end of that song, you're really watching a star being born.
I fall in love too easily. I fall in love too fast. I fall in love too terribly hard for love to ever last. My heart should be well schooled, 'cause I've been fooled in the past, and still I fall in love too easily.
When did Sinatra, if ever, decide to take acting seriously?
Well, I think when his initial impetus was sort of twofold. It came out of his unbelievably restless personality that he could never stop, which is why he worked almost, you know, right to the end of his life. And so the records and the personal appearances weren't enough, and he wanted to be a movie star. In those pre-internet days, he knew that would give him worldwide fame. And he felt all along that, he said years later, that he realized he had always been acting, because when he was singing with Harry James and Tommy Dorsey on the ballads, he was acting out the lyrics. You know, he's the supreme communicator that way. So he felt always he had that ability, and with that chip on his shoulder that Sinatra always had, his attitude was, I'll show them. Not only can I be a movie star, but if they want to peg me just as a musical star, I'll show them I can be a dramatic actor. And that's exactly what he did.
And I guess it's no surprise that his best films as a dramatic actor are ones when he worked with the best directors. And I suppose his most famous dramatic film, maybe it's not From Here to Eternity, maybe it's The Manchurian Candidate, but it's one of those. I mean, From Here to Eternity is the one that not only got him his Academy Award, but sort of relaunched his career.
Right, because that was the lowest point of Sinatra's career by far, because not only had he lost his studio contracts, people forget he had lost his recording contracts, and he was nowhere, and in fact had so little work that when he became obsessed with playing the role of Maggio in From Here to Eternity, he was literally hanging around Ava Gardner's movie set while she was making Mogambo in Africa, because he had nothing else to do.
Well, of course, the famous fictional version of how he got the part, in which described in the movie The Godfather, with the horse's head incident and all that. Any relationship to reality of how Frank Sinatra got the part in From Here to Eternity?
It really doesn't have a basis in reality. You know, the myth has taken on such proportions now that you almost can't get people to not believe it. But I talk about it in the book because I think it's important, because, look, Sinatra did some really foolish things in terms of friendships with the boys, as I call them. But they had absolutely nothing to do with making him a star, and the the true story of how he got the role is actually much more interesting, because it's that he was obsessed with the role. As he said, I saw Maggio every morning when I shaved. I grew up with Maggio's in Hoboken. And he would bombard Fred Zinnemann, the director, with telegrams signed Maggio. He flew in from Africa on his own dime, well, actually it was Ava's dime because Frank was broke, to audition for just 10 minutes. And when they finally, they were still wavering, they really wanted Eli Wallach for the role, and Ava, who was the bigger movie star at the time, went to Harry Cohn, the head of Columbia, and she said, there's only one person who can play the role of Maggio, and it happens to be the SOB I'm married to. And so for me, that combination of his determination and Ava and what was going on in his career is a much more interesting story than the myth of The Godfather.
The winner is Frank Sinatra.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm deeply thrilled and very moved. And I really, really don't know what to say, because this is a whole new kind of thing, you know, like song and dance man type stuff. And I'm terribly pleased, and if I start thanking everybody, I'll do a one-reeler up here, so I better not. And I'd just like to say, however, that they're doing a lot of songs here tonight, but somebody asked me. But I love you, though. Thank you very much. I'm absolutely thrilled. Thank you.
We're talking with Tom Santopietro, and his book is called Sinatra in Hollywood. I think radio plays a pretty important role in the development of Frank as an actor. Around the same time as From Here to Eternity, he had his own series, the Rocky Fortune show. What do you think? He does a pretty good job as Rocky Fortune.
Yeah, Rocky Fortune is a really interesting oddball entry in the Sinatra film career, and it's kind of fascinating to listen to. I agree with you completely, and I think you're also right on the money. Radio, by the nature of the intimacy of the medium, you know, the singer could really connect with the listener, and that ability to communicate a lyric, that which is acting, really came through for Sinatra. And in fact, it's the same thing with Doris Day. It was real. That's why she could communicate and became such a huge movie star as well.
Well, you know, I think that one of the differences between Frank and Doris Day was such a natural actress. I mean, when she comes on the screen, you almost always forget that it's Doris Day within the first couple of minutes. Whereas I don't think that happens so much with Sinatra. I don't think he was quite the natural actor that she was.
Well, or yes, or else he made a lot of junk. In the bad movies, you can't forget it's Frank Sinatra. In the good movies, you can. In The Manchurian Candidate, From Here to Eternity, and a sensational performance in The Man with the Golden Arm with Otto Preminger. And he really, Sinatra just, it's fascinating to watch him in this, because he just digs down and was unafraid to go to the darker places in a way that somebody like Bing Crosby, another singing actor, never really dug down to that level.
Well, we'll argue about that later. But Frank Capra, in his book, says that Sinatra was perfect on the first take and would get subsequently worse as takes went on.
Right, right. He was known as One Take Charlie, and it wasn't out of laziness, it was out of the fact that because he was such an instinctive actor, that he was at his best by far on the first take. And Capra said that, Vincent Minnelli said it, John Frankenheimer said it, you know, the really great directors he worked with recognized it. And finally, the solution they came up with was they would rehearse the rest of the cast, light the set, and have them rehearse endlessly before Sinatra. Sinatra would do one walkthrough, and boom, they would then go. So it was a lot of pressure on the directors and his fellow actors, but he was always best on the first take.
Of course, some actors are better as takes go along. Was there ever a conflict in which, you know, you've got an actor like Frank who's good on the first take, and an actress, you know, who needs 10 takes to get it right?
Oh, I absolutely, and that was particularly evident with Frank and Marlon Brando in Guys and Dolls. And a couple of things about Brando. One of the things I wanted to point out in the book is that in the mid-50s, Sinatra on screen, he and Brando were battling for the biggest dramatic roles. Sinatra wanted Brando's role in On the Waterfront. Brando wanted Sinatra's role in The Man with the Golden Arm. And so they finally worked together in Guys and Dolls and did not get along for the very reason you say. You know, Brando rehearsed endlessly, and Sinatra got so frustrated he said to Mankiewicz, the director, "Listen, coach, don't put me in the game till Mumbles over there is through rehearsing." And so there was animosity, and the funny story that I love is that years later, at the end of Sinatra's life, when he was pretty much housebound, he finally started to watch his own movies, and he was watching Guys and Dolls with his daughter Tina, and Brando finished a song, and Sinatra looked at Tina and said, "Geez, the guy still can't sing."
50 years, I didn't know. Well, you know, Guys and Dolls is such a disappointing film, and it seems like, gosh, if they had cast Brando in the role of Nathan Detroit and cast Sinatra as Sky Masterson, they would have had a much better picture.
I'm with you all the way, because just, you know, the chance to have heard Frank, seen Frank on film singing Luck Be a Lady, which became one of his standards in concert, you know, just would have lifted that musical to a whole different level.
And I believe the score that Frank Lesser wrote for Nathan Detroit is written for a non-singer.
Right, because Sam Levine, the original, was certainly not a singer. And so, you know, it was just a kind of in that crazy Hollywood way, you know, they cut songs and just, you're right, they reversed the casting. It wasn't what it should have been. But it makes for some great stories about the conflicts between Sinatra and Brando.
Well, let's talk about some of Frank Sinatra's great films. We're talking with Tom Santopietro, and his book is called Sinatra in Hollywood. And I guess the first really great thing he did, although it's maybe kind of corny now, is The House I Live In.
That's a 10-minute short he did in 1946, and he won a special Oscar for it about religious prejudice. And, you know, just what you said, we can look at it through the prism of 2009 and think it's corny, but it wears its heart on its sleeve, and there's something very affecting about it and about Sinatra singing this pan to the United States of America, and it still gets you today, and it's that really, you know, that was his first Oscar. He ended up with an acting Oscar and then a humanitarian Oscar as well, and another nomination. So
yeah, the Gene Herschel though.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
One of my favorite, I guess. Yeah, for kind of neglected films, and the fact that it's in the public domain, there's terrible prints of it around, including a colorized one where Frank has brown eyes. And the film I'm referring to is Suddenly.
Well, you're right on the money, because I call that the forgotten gem of Sinatra's screen career. It's a terrific, tight little black and white film, and you know, he plays this psychopathic presidential assassin, and it's a great performance. I mean, he really is up there blazing away, literally and figuratively. And of course, you know, the film was withdrawn from circulation years later because of the eerie parallels to the JFK assassination.
And it's, you know, fans of film noir would love it. It seems like it's time to find the negative and strike a beautiful print and do some wonderful DVD of it, but that hasn't happened yet, as far as I know.
Yeah, it really is time, because it's a great little film, and I've shown it to a number of people, and everybody's kind of amazed by the film, you know, that it's this tough, mean little film, and that Sinatra is so chilling as the presidential assassin, and it makes an interesting bookend with The Manchurian Candidate, you know, 8 years later, which also involves a presidential assassination.
Which was also out of circulation for years and years.
Right, which was a combination of, again, the parallels to the JFK assassination, and also Sinatra himself said, on the DVD, there's an really interesting interview with Sinatra and John Frankenheimer, who did such a great job directing, and Sinatra says in this interview that he actually didn't realize that he was the one that owned the rights to the film. And once he realized that he fully controlled it, then they re-released it. I think it was in 1988, and it did very well in theaters again.
Well, it is a great film, and his brooding characterization is unlike any other film, I think, of his.
I agree. And I actually think more than Eternity and Man with a Golden Arm, I think that's probably his best sustained acting. It's a really terrific performance. And I think that original version has it all over the remake with Denzel Washington and Meryl Streep.
Never mind the remake. in between his two goofy Tony Rome films, he made this movie called The Detective, which is a pretty interesting film, a 1960s film. What do you think of that film?
Well, the Detective, just what you said, it's a really interesting film, and it's not altogether successful, but it is compelling, and it's very much a reflection of the time, because it was dealing with all these issues that were kind of bubbling over then, everything from the racial issues in the country to issues of homosexuality and the newfound freedom on the screen. And it's a very tough, grim film. And what Sinatra was doing at that stage in his film career was he fit the construct of the detective or the private eye perfectly, because these are characters who have been around the block more than once and are tough and have kind of lived-in faces. And that was Frank Sinatra at the time. And we really buy him in that persona. And of course, at that time, what I discovered in the research was that Sinatra was the original choice to play Dirty Harry and was signed for the film and couldn't make it because he had to have an operation at the time. And I get it, because I can see Frank Sinatra saying, "Go ahead, punk, make my day."
Mm-hmm. Well, Rocky Fortune.
Exactly.
Instead of Rocky Fortune.
There you go.
I think probably his last... he made a couple of things afterwards, but his last real great film, or his last real film, is The First Deadly Sin with Faye Dunaway, and I think that's a pretty interesting movie also.
I agree with you. It's a... It's up and down as a film, but at the end, Sinatra has this extraordinary scene where Faye Dunaway, his wife, has died, and he has been reading to her out of a children's book that gave her comfort that she remembered from her childhood. And the way he reads that book and the catch in his voice and the tenderness, the toughness yet tenderness, which was the Sinatra screen dichotomy, it is remarkable. It's actually hard not to get affected by that when you watch him there. It's a lovely piece of acting.
And I guess that is his last starring theatrical film. He was looking for something else to do?
Yeah, he was always searching for material. And in fact, his daughter Tina, who did produce the Sinatra miniseries based on his life, he hired her to search for material for him. I mean, he really cared. He still wanted to make movies. But what happens, as we know in Hollywood, is that there are very few leading roles for men over 70, and so the acting he did tended to be on television with the Magnum P.I. special, and the very last thing he ever did on film was a television movie Tina produced called Young at Heart, where Sinatra played himself again. And so he had come full circle. He started out playing himself, and the last thing he did, he played himself again.
And he had some kinds of supernatural powers, as it turns out, in this film.
Yes, it's like Olympia Dukakis is a widow obsessed with Frank Sinatra's always gotten her through hard times, and he appears on her doorstep, and it's very odd, because it's almost as if, you know, Lourdes has come to Hoboken and that Sinatra has these mystical powers. And that is what his persona was so huge by then. It was almost impossible for him to play a normal role.
Well, you did mention The Man with the Golden Arm, directed by Otto Preminger. He plays a drug addict. Talk about that film a little bit.
Well, Sinatra really wanted to make that film. He avidly sought the film rights, and Brando was in competition with him for the film rights. And what he knew, it was a great part, because this is a guy getting out of prison and a wannabe drummer, so Sinatra's musicality informed that. And, he was playing a drug addict, so there were these terrific, really juicy acting opportunities, and he delivers. There's this amazing... The film is dated now, but his performance hasn't dated, and he has this extraordinary withdrawal scene, and it's quite lengthy, and he performed the whole scene in one take. And he said to Preminger, I'll get it the first time, and Preminger knew, and they just shot it once, and he had nailed it. So it's a real benchmark in his career, and one of the things and why I wanted to look at Sinatra's screen legacy is because in the 70s, late 70s, he was on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and Carson said, nobody's had a career as big as yours. What's the highlight? And he instantly said, winning the Oscar for From Here to Eternity and making The Man with the Golden Arm, because it changed the film industry. So I was fascinated that he didn't say making the Capitol albums with Nelson Riddle or winning the Grammys. He went right to the movie
right to the
work.
Movies.
I thought that is a very revealing answer.
So he did take movies more seriously than people think.
Absolutely. He took them a lot more seriously. And yet, I say this in the book, you know, he was the first to admit that he had made junk and wasted his talent on some films. And
you're calling Sergeant's Three junk? I think people would be surprised to learn that he was also a director. He directed a film.
Yeah, he did, and a good World War II movie, None But the Brave, and it's a nice piece of directing, and he actually liked directing, and the reason why he didn't do more is because he, I feel he was too impatient. You know, Sinatra was monumentally impatient, and you can't be that impatient as a director. But boy, he would have made a great screen musical as a director. So, you know, there's just these fascinating aspects to him on film. And just going back with your joke about Sergeant's Three, my favorite comment about his bad films was Frank's own comment about a terrible musical he made called The Kissing Bandit. And his review was, promise me you'll never let my granddaughter see the movie.
Well, although he did make some bad movies, many of his bad movies have wonderful moments in them. You know, the song The Brooklyn Bridge is such a great song from a not-so-interesting movie.
Right.
I think The Tender Trap, where he sings The Tender Trap at the piano with Debbie Reynolds, it's not a great movie, but that's a wonderful scene.
That's it. And I agree with that, because in The Tender Trap, the two good moments are when Frank sings the title tune over the credits as he strolls on screen, and then that moment with Debbie Reynolds when he's showing her how to sing the song. And so it's what happens with real movie stars. You wait through the bad stuff because they deliver a moment that is just so extraordinary. And I feel it's, you know, when Katharine Hepburn said, whatever it is, I've got it. And I feel Sinatra had it.
You see a pair of laughing eyes, and suddenly you're sighing sighs. You're thinking nothing's wrong, you string along, boy, then snap. Eyes, those sighs, they're part of the tender trap. You see what I mean? You just gotta let it settle a little bit. You're hand in hand beneath the trees, and soon there's music in the breeze. You're acting kinda smart until your heart just goes whack. Those trees, that breeze, they're part of the tender trap. Some starry night, when her kisses make you tingle, she'll hold you tight, and you'll hate yourself for being single. All at once it seems so nice. The folks are throwing shoes and rice. You hurry to a spot that's just a dot on the map. You wonder how it all came about. It's too late now, there's no getting out. You fell in love. Some starry night when her kisses make you tingle. She'll hold you tight and you'll hate yourself for being single. And all at once it seems so nice. The folks are throwing shoes and rice. You hurry to a spot that's just a dot on the map. Boom, 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 boom. You wonder how it all came about. It's too late now, there's no getting out. You fell in love, and love is a tender trust.
It's a fine book, and it's called Sinatra in Hollywood, and the author is Tom Santopietro. And thank you so much for being with us on From the Bookshelf.
Thanks so much for having me on. This has been great.
That's all the time we have for this week's From the Bookshelf. Hope you enjoyed the program. I'll be back again next week with another great show. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at kusp.org. Thanks, as always, to our From the Bookshelf production staff, Miss Breanne Beal. Thanks, Breanne. Thanks for listening, everybody. From KUSP in Santa Cruz, I'm Gary Shapiro. Bye-bye.